This episode of the Gospel Coalition podcast is sponsored by Baker Books, presenting On Reading Well by Karen Swallow Pryor, a book on how reading great literature has the power to cultivate virtue. Available wherever books are sold. This is the Gospel Coalition podcast, where we seek to renew the contemporary church in the ancient gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Colin Hansen. Today's podcast is a talk by Tony Renke on parenting in the digital age. It was recorded at a meeting for the Gospel Coalition Council members in 2018.
How do we steward teens in the digital age? This is the major question facing parents and pastors, and it's my assignment tonight. Kids between the ages of 6 and 23 fall into a demographic now being called post-millennial. So you have millennials, and now you have post-millennials, or you can call them Gen Z, or as I'm going to call them tonight, iGen. So lowercase I, capital G-E-N. Tonight, I want to take a few minutes to introduce you to the research on this generation, and then process the implications for pastors and for leaders and for parents. These questions are thick in the air. You know that. To be honest, I don't know which sin is worse, the arrogance of speaking in generalities about an entire generation or the sin of ignoring the data trends. I'm going to try to navigate both and avoid both of those sins. Tonight, I will take the data trends and then plead with you, as we just heard, to parent and pastor each teen uniquely in your lives. So who is iGen? iGen is a recent label given to those born between 1995 and 2012. They represent 74 million Americans, or roughly 24% of the population. It is the most diverse generation in American history. It is also the most digitally connected and smartphone-addicted generation as well. iGeners were born after the internet was commercialized in 1995. So that's the line, 1995. Internet is commercialized, born between then and 2012, you are iGen. They have no pre-internet memories. Each of them entered or will enter into adolescence in the age of the smartphone. Gene Twenge, a psychologist at San Diego State University, has written the most systematic study about iGen. She has ran all the data sets, conducted the interviews, and has now voiced her concerns, first published in a feature article in The Atlantic titled, "Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation?" Have Smartphones Destroyed a Generation? That was an excerpt from her book, which later came out, titled iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and Completely Unprepared for Adulthood. It's quite a title. If Tom Hanks represents a generation in the movie Big, children who want to grow into adults quickly, iGen is the exact opposite. Teens postponing the transition into adulthood. That's what they're marked by. Twenge's extensive study can be really summarized in three words. iGen are safe. iGeners are safe. They're known by being safe. They are the first generation to grow up with active shooter drills at school since kindergarten. They are the most protected generation by parents. By preference, they are the most self-cloistered generation of teens. Taking all the evidence together, iGen teens are more likely to be homebodies. Compared to previous generations, iGen teens are statistically less likely to go to parties, to go on dates, to get their driver's licenses, to drink alcohol, to smoke tobacco, to ride in a car without a seatbelt, or to experiment with sex. Now, many of these trends are good, and we should celebrate the turning away from some of these foolish behaviors. But as Twenge says, if you take all these things together, these trends offer a portrait of behaviors that mark a generation that has embraced delayed adolescence, delayed adulthood, and prolonged adolescence. Delayed adulthood and prolonged adolescence. Along with delayed adulthood and prolonged adolescence, the iGen is marked by a few other key factors. Number one, they are smartphone natives. According to one study, the average age for a child getting their first smartphone in the United States is now 10.3 years old. Many of these phones are hand-me-downs from mom or dad, but between 12 and 17, nearly 80% of Americans identify as smartphone users. 80%, 12 to 17. Number two, they're always online. iGeners are spending less time working jobs, less time volunteering, less time engaged in student activities, less time doing homework. The result, they're spending massive amounts of time at home and online. They're virtually never offline, driven to their devices by social promise, by friendships, and by their social peer networks. Number three, they are secularizing. Among iGen, about 1 in 4 do not attend religious services or practice any form of private spirituality. 1 in 4. iGeners are more likely than any generation before them to be raised by religiously unaffiliated parents. And obviously, there are a number of believers within this demographic, but 1 in 4 are thoroughly secularized. Number four, they perceive one another through fractured bits. Using a skill that Clive Thomas has called ambient awareness, it turns out that teens are really good at taking little fractured fragments of social media, discrete images, texts, tweets, and fitting those bits into a better understanding of their peers. For me, it feels weird to connect with someone in person and talk about like what they tweeted or posted on Facebook. This is weird, like you just don't do that, right? Well, teens do that. Teens understand that. Teens are more naturally accustomed to thinking of these bits that they see on Instagram and associating that with a person they see at school. Ambient awareness. Number five, they are woke. They are woke. Twenge argues that millennials are at heart optimists, while iGeners who grew up during the Great Recession are more pessimistic, more sensitive to social tensions, and more compelled to protect anyone they believe to be vulnerable. This is why in a high school, if you have a public high school scenario where an LGBT student feels threatened, iGeners will come around them. They're very sensitive to anything that's not safe. As we've seen, they can act on this wokeness too. We've seen this in the Parkland rally, the March for Our Lives, the National School Walkout Day, and the Never Again movement online. iGeners may be homebodies, but they can rally. And of course, this is not without layers of problems, as teens can easily get used to push the political agenda of adults, right? I mean, Alan Jacobs has talked about this recently in his piece, Contemporary Children's Crusades, where he talks about that. But nevertheless, iGeners are socially woke, and this will likely play a big role in the 2020 election and politics going forward. And it also shapes how pastors and parents engage in this generation. They're just on social media more. They hear what's happening more. They're more woke. So what immediate challenges does this iGen pose for us as parents and as pastors and as leaders? By far the most concerning takeaway from Twenge's research, and confirmed by many others, is that there is a spike in teen depression that we're seeing now. Between 2012 and 2015, 3 years, 2012 to 2015, depression among boys rose 21% and depression among girls rose 50%. These upticks are reflected in suicide rates. Quote, after declining during the 1990s and stabilizing in the 2000s, the suicide rate for teens has risen again. 46% more 15 to 19-year-olds committed suicide in 2015 than 2007. 46% more in 2015 over 2007. And 2.5 times more 12 to 14-year-olds killed themselves. You see this on Facebook Live. Some of these have been broadcasted. It is the paradox of iGen an optimism and self-confidence online that covers a deep vulnerability, even depression, in real life, writes Trench. Going so far as to say this, quote, "It's not an exaggeration to describe iGen as being on the brink of the worst mental health crisis in decades. Much of this deterioration can be traced to their phones." So who is iGen? They're woke. They have ambient awareness. They appear confident online. They are never offline. And technology conveniently buffers and brokers their relationships from home in a lot of cases. And technology is feeding their loneliness. Parents and pastors know a lot of this. We see the effects of this. Parents and pastors were seeing the effects of this long before studies like Twinge, her study, came out. Parents and pastors are usually like on the front end of seeing the consequences of digital abuse. So how can we parent and pastor teens with wisdom? When talking about teens and screens, screenagers, as they've been called, we need to get concrete. So let me offer you some practical suggestions to stir into the discussions that you're already having in your churches and in your homes. I've got 12 of them. Number one, delay social media as long as possible. Delay social media as long as possible. Social media poses a dilemma. Journalist Nancy Jo Sales wrote a fascinating and frightening book titled American Girls, Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers. If you've got a daughter between the 6 to 16-year range, read this if you don't want to sleep well at night. American Girls, Social Media and the Secret Lives of Teenagers. Some very frightening things that she, this journalist, brings to the forefront. There she recounts a conversation she had with one teen girl who said to her, quote, "Social media is destroying our lives." To which Sales asked, "Well, why don't you go offline?" To which this teen girl responded, "Because then we would have no life." Social media is where teens look for life, and it's what costs them their lives. We must help our kids see this paradox and unmask it for the false promise that it really is. Social media, unwisely used, will cost them something very precious, and they can't see what that cost is. We can help them with that. Delay social media as long as possible. Number two, delay smartphones as long as possible. We're going to talk a little bit more about this later. But once you introduce to your child a mobile-connected smartphone with texting and with apps like Snapchat, parental control is virtually futile at that point. It's over. For example, your kids can be exposed to sexualized conversations and nude selfies, and you would likely never know it. You would never know it. Again, in her book, Sales does the investigation of the troubling phenomenon of girls. Get this. Girls receiving unsolicited nude selfies from boys in text messages as a first step of a boy showing interest in a girl. And boys often then asking the girls for nude selfies in return. We're dealing with text, Snapchat. You can't parentally control this stuff. Obviously, we must warn our kids of this phenomenon before it happens, but there are virtually no parental filters to prevent nude selfies from arriving on your daughter's smartphone via text or Snapchat, even if your daughter has never asked for it to begin with. 47% of teens use Snapchat, which is the premier app for sending an image that disappears, right? Or so they think. Kids also need to know that those images don't disappear. You can screen grab them, save them, pass them. There's whole schools now caught up in scandal where hundreds of nude selfies have been collected by people to use as blackmail. Unbelievable stories happening in San Diego currently. One psychologist has said, in the smartphone age, sexting is now a normative part of teen life. Normative. These are potent devices. Resist the pressure to give your kid one, and don't leave old phones around, even if they're deactivated. Some of this will make more sense as we go along. Number three, inside the home, moderate the Wi-Fi. Inside the home, moderate the Wi-Fi. In our home, the default is to keep the Wi-Fi off until it's needed. In our home, the default is to keep the Wi-Fi off until it's needed. Many routers now allow you to do this through iPhone apps. We use the Circle device. I don't know how many of you have heard of the Circle device. Maybe a few of you. We use that in our home. It sits right beside our router, and it gives me the power to cut off the Wi-Fi immediately to any device based on content filters, based off time spent on a specific app, based on bedtimes, and we can just hit pause. Mom and Dad have the power to just hit pause on the Wi-Fi, and everything stops. And our kids know that, and that's why our kids hate the Circle device. That's how you know it's a good device, because our kids hate it. So no, it is it's an amazing piece of equipment. There's lots of different ways to do this. There's other routers that do this, but it breaks the Wi-Fi connection between the router and a device or computer. So Mom and Dad don't have to set parental filters on all the devices, the computers, the laptops, the iPhones, the iPads. You don't have to do all that. There's a way to govern it all through limitations of the Wi-Fi. In fact, I could, from this podium, I told my wife I wouldn't do it because the kids are probably doing homework right now, but I could pause the family computer from an app on my phone right here. It has that kind of flexibility. I love it. Wrote more about it online. If you want to find a review, you can go to the Desiring God website. And I wrote a whole review on the Circle. More can be said here. When I'm at home and my kids want to use Wi-Fi for a specific purpose, they come to me and ask, "Hey, Dad, can I use Wi-Fi for homework?" I make them articulate to me why they want to use the technology, because that's one of the downsides to the technological age, is technology comes at us with a new slick way to do something. The question is, what is that something that needs to be done? And so helping our kids articulate, this is why I need the Wi-Fi. I need the Wi-Fi to spend 30 minutes in research for an article, for a piece that I'm writing for my class in English. Whatever it is, they need to articulate, what's the purpose that you're using the Wi-Fi for? So that's inside the home. Inside the home, govern the Wi-Fi. It'll make more sense in a moment. Number four, outside of the home, connect without smartphones. Connect without smartphones. For 6 to 12-year-olds, consider getting something like the Verizon Gizmo. Verizon has a thing called the Gizmo, which is a smartwatch. It has a speakerphone built into it. It can call 6 numbers, and it can receive phone calls from 6 numbers, and it has a GPS locator in it. So parents want technology to do 3 things, basically, right? You want to call your kid whenever, you want your kid to call you whenever, and you want GPS eyes on where they're at, right? Those are the 3 things, and you don't need a smartwatch to do those 3 things. Just ask your provider, what kinds of technology can I use that's not a smartphone? The Gizmo, great example for something that works between 5 to 12 year olds. And obviously for age 13 plus, you want to consider flip phones. You might lose GPS location, but you won't be giving them a smartphone. You want to hold off as long as possible on that. Point number 5, my recommendation number 5 to stir into your conversations that you're having with parents and in your churches. Number 5, stair-step technology over the years. Stair-step technology over the years. I think the most common mistake parents make is in assuming that the smartphone is an isolated gadget, and it's not. The smartphone is a culmination of all the communications technology a child has been introduced to from birth. To be given a smartphone is a sort of graduation, several steps of technology into a process by which they then receive a smartphone. What does this look like? Well, for my wife and I, it was very simple. We took a piece of paper, we drew a big box. On the top left, we put 0, top right, we put 18. So that's 0 to 18. That's the time span of our kids in our home. Hopefully they're gone. No, they won't be gone at 18, but 0 to 18. So we're now mapping out their digital future. And this works because now we have control of the Wi-Fi at home. We can turn it off. We can filter it. We can determine which devices get used when. And once you have that ability, now you can map out some steps. On paper, you draw this box, 0 to 18, and then you stair-step from the bottom left corner to the top right corner. Each step up is a new technological device or a new app or some sort of new use for the home's technology. At some point early on, you might introduce a tablet with coloring games or with educational games. Could be at age 3, could be at age 4, could be age 5. Whatever you decide as a family, you step up. And then at some point, you may introduce a family computer to the equation. Maybe we keep ours in the living room. It's very open. We see what's happening on that computer. That happens at age 10. About age 10, kids start having writing assignments. They're not doing Google searches, but they're typing. About age 10, it's a step up. Then you introduce the gizmo or some sort of device, or maybe a flip phone. That's a new step up for them. And then perhaps at some point you introduce Facebook or some social media in a limited capacity from the family computer. You step up. And then comes the capstone. Then comes the smartphone. And you can literally, when you take that step, you can draw a line through that entire process. And to the left, we've been talking about using the Wi-Fi at home, which gives mom and dad fairly significant control over what they see and how they use it. Once you introduce a smartphone and mobile web, you've now given them a tool by which parental controls are virtually powerless. Again, we're talking about texting, Snapchatting, things like those things. There's no parental filters for that. Once you introduce the smartphone, you've now moved into a whole nother realm of digital media. That's why when I read the stats, average kid getting a smartphone in America is now 10.3. Now, the advantages to this are twofold. One, you can accordion these steps as you see fit. And you can show your kid where they're at in the process. So you graduate them along this process. As they show themselves faithful in little things at home, they're moving towards the smartphone to come later. Number two, it also reminds parents that once you give a child a smartphone with a mobile data plan, you move from having strong parental control over your child's internet experience to virtually having none. You can draw a bold black line between Wi-Fi at home, mobile web everywhere. Huge transition. It's a graduation. It's a graduation. Number six is a blanket rule for all ages and all devices. Either keep screens out of bedrooms altogether, or number two, keep them out of the bedroom for at least 12 hours, like 8 to 8. No TVs, no gaming devices, tablets, laptops, or phones. Break off the endless social demands. Break the gaming addictions. Preserve sleep patterns. Make sure all the devices are being charged in one place every night. Maybe it's in mom and dad's room. Maybe it's in the living room, wherever you do it. Make sure that there's a place where all devices are plugged in at night, not in a child's room. Number seven, write out a smartphone contract. Write out a smartphone contract. When you move to the smartphone, write a contract out of expected behaviors, curfews, family expectations that come along with the phone and this responsibility that they now have. Have your child share with you the login information for every app, for the phone itself. And get familiar with the necessary steps to temporarily pause or to deactivate that phone. A lot of carriers make that pretty easy for mom and dad these days. For parents who made the mistake of introducing the smartphone too soon, and you're gonna come face to face with these parents in pastoral ministry. These are the conversations I never look forward to when I speak on smartphones and teenagers, because I always see those parents. They look like they got the weight of the world on their shoulders, and they're standing in line to talk to me, and I know what's coming. They're going to ask me, we gave our daughter a smartphone too soon, and now we regret it. What do we do now? And you try to walk back this decision now and undo some of the mistakes that they made in giving their child this powerful device too soon. And one of the things you can do with those parents who are coming to you is you can have them write out a smartphone contract. It's never too late to have this contract in place. And again, the rules are broken, it's deactivated. Number eight, watch how each child responds to the digital age. This has been so fascinating to me as a dad. My wife and I have three iGeners. two teens as of last weekend. We have now two teens, and each of them use digital media completely differently. I have one kid who will watch every dumb Dude Perfect video like 40 times. I mean, he laughs at the same stuff over and over. Like, you've seen this video dozens of times and you still laugh at the same. He will waste hours and hours of time watching YouTube. My daughter's completely different. She will save up money by babysitting, and she'll buy a ukulele or a clarinet or an electronic keyboard. She'll buy a new instrument, and then she'll go to YouTube and spend 30 to 40 minutes watching how you play an instrument and just get the basic notes down. And she goes into her room and learns and teaches herself instruments from YouTube. It's absolutely amazing to see the power of YouTube to unlock new tactile skills in my kids. Quite frankly, I want all my kids to learn from YouTube like that. YouTube is an amazing resource, but I don't want them to go into YouTube too soon. So you got to watch each kid. Each kid does different things on the web. You just watch them. Some teens will want social media so they can follow 5,000 people, and some teens will want social media so they can follow their 5 closest friends. Those are radically different uses. Parent each child uniquely based on what you see in them. And this is a good place for a little caveat, because YouTube is becoming a platform where this Christian moral discourse is happening, where discipleship is happening, where college students are creating videos and channels to speak to high schoolers about the pressures of high school. YouTube is a tremendously powerful platform for discipleship, and we've just begun to see the influence of it. That was number nine, recenter parenting and pastoring on the affections. Recenter parenting and pastoring on the affections. Smartphones do not invent new sins. They don't. They don't invent new sins. They simply amplify every extant temptation of life. And they manifest those temptations in pixels on high-def surfaces 24/7. Old temptations are given new levels of attraction, new levels of addiction, new levels of accessibility, which means that the tension and anxiety parents feel in the pit of their stomachs in the digital age come from the realization that we are waging an all-out war for the affections of our teenagers. This is what's so frightening. Parenting has always been a war for our kids' affections, but the digital age exposes our parental laziness like nothing before. If our teens cannot find their highest satisfaction in Jesus Christ, they're going to look for it somewhere else. That message has always been relevant. That's always been true. It just hits like a hammer now for parents, because today that something else is a smartphone. We see that something else, that grabbing for the social approval, for the material promise, for the popularity, for all the things that draw them to their phones. We are in an all-out war for the hearts of our teens, and the digital age has exposed that in a very sharp way. They must treasure Christ above every trifle of the digital age, or those trifles are going to overcome them. And that is why parenting feels so urgent. This is why parents have so many questions about the digital age. They're feeling that. They're feeling that tug of war. Point number 10, take up digital discipleship. Take up digital discipleship. Because of what's at stake, it is not enough to isolate a handful of proverbs and add some general counsel and call it good. Discipling teens in the digital age requires all of Scripture applied to all of the heart. And this is because we're dealing with all the facets of what the heart wants. This war for the affections in the digital age holds unprecedented new opportunities for discipling teens. That's the good news. If we can move from temptation to biblical text to Christ, this is our challenge, and this is our new opportunity in the digital age. I'm not going to belabor this point, because that's essentially what 12 Ways does, and you've all got a copy of it. Our phones deform us, and they show ways forward for how we as parents and pastors can help form and shape and disciple teens. Once we, as parents and pastors, are humble to self-criticize our own smartphone abuse, it's often the first step. Am I willing to self-critique myself? Then we can turn and help our kids too. The digital age is scary. It's scary and it's exhausting, but it opens up phenomenal new opportunities to disciple teens because we're dealing with heart stuff, deep, penetrating, sharp heart stuff. Number 11, as a family, redeem dinners, car rides, and vacations. This is a duh, this is a no-brainer, but I want to say it. As a family, redeem dinners, car rides, and vacations. Make the dinner table and car rides together and family vacations phone-free zones. I am regularly amazed at how many of the pressures that my kids face at school or in relationships gets voiced in dinner conversations or in drives across town. It's just those unhurried times together where the phone's not off, the radio can be turned off, decompressing from the day. It's just sweet opportunities that we don't want to miss because our teenager sitting in the passenger seat has earbuds in. And finally, number 12, keep building the church. Keep building the church. The stats are in. iGen is now the loneliest generation in America. Lonelier than the 72-plus demographic. Twenge believes smartphones cause iGen loneliness, but perhaps it's wiser to look at a larger phenomena predating the iPhone. Surrounding yourself with enough technology, enough machines, you'll eventually need no one else, right? Get the right gadget in your life and you can do anything. Dozens of sci-fi novels have already walked out this idea of a robot-saturated existence, and you know where it leads? In every case, it leads towards isolation and loneliness for us. And once the tech age has rendered everyone else unnecessary to you, at some point you wake up and realize you have become unnecessary to everyone else. And that is a poignant sting in the digital age, in the technological age. We're only beginning to see this play out. When no one needs you, we feel the catastrophic spike in social loneliness. iGens feel this already. The elderly feel this already. Midlife men feel this already. And into this technological age of increasing isolation and loneliness, in the words of one writer, the smartphone then becomes a painkiller for the loneliness. A painkiller which cloaks the agony of loneliness, but which social media will never fix. That's the loop. Teens want their life, so they go on the phone continually, and they don't find their life there. That's where this loop comes from. The smartphone becomes a painkiller, and it only cloaks the agony of loneliness. So I don't care what you get from my message tonight. I'm at 32 minutes. I've run over. We got to do this panel, and I'm looking forward to it. But the greatest need of our teens today is not new restrictions and new dumb phones and contracts and limits. Their greatest need is a community of faith where they can thrive in Christ, serve and be served, to find a necessary place as a legitimate part of a healthy church. Keep building faithful churches. Listen to teens. Don't mock them. Don't mock them. Don't laugh at them. Envision them for risk-taking mission, online and offline. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Gospel Coalition podcast. For more gospel-centered resources, visit thegospelcoalition.org. Support for this podcast comes from listeners like you. Learn more and join us at tgc.org/donate.